professors.
I'm
going to stop it.
No, actually.
I was like, thank you, Rick.
This is for you.
No.
So we can podcast.
Oh.
Professor Barber.
So how do we do it? We just go with. I guess I just hit record.
Yeah.
Where's record?
It's the red board.
Oh, no, that's erased.
Oh, don't hit that one. On the top, the red one.
Wow, that's a microphone.
Well, maybe you can do that on the way out. Maybe you can just announce it and leave it up front. The thing that, like, it's the angle thing where he can move. Oh, there it is.
Oh, good.
You can get it.
I'm going to take the microphone. I'll just use that.
Keep
that.
Oh, yeah. I don't have to be
that's just wrong.
Thank you. an old Zoom on my team. Okay, let's get started. By the way, we'll keep this as informal as possible. My name is Bob Cohen. I'm the Eastern Regional Associate Director of Barbary. Graduated Hofstra Law School. I remember sitting in this room for 2 hours on a Friday afternoon of civil procedure with then Professor Rabinowitz, who became Dean Rabinowitz, who is now the president of Hofstra. I also had con law with Leon Friedman, so this brings back tons of great memories. Seriously, however, what we want to do in the next 35 minutes, 40 minutes or so, is rather informally run through pretty much everything my professors here at Hofstra never told me about the bar exam. Not because they didn't know anything about the bar, but simply because it was underscored from the time I was a first year that what we're doing here at Hofstra Law School is dramatically different than what we would expect to see on the bar exam. The purpose of law school being to give us critical thinking, the purpose of the bar exam, really, for lack of a better analogy, is really nothing more than a game. So with that as a mind, if there's something that I'm saying that I'm going through quickly or something I'm not clear on or something you have a question on that you think would benefit everybody, please stop me, interrupt me. If it's something a bit more personal, we can talk about it afterwards. Or if it's something regarding the bar in general, there is a Barbary table downstairs and it'll be there till about 7 o'clock this evening. So feel free to stop by and we can address any personal concern. The bar exam, as I mentioned, is dramatically different than what we're doing in our 3 years of law school. Nothing pretty much underscores this more than if we think back. Is there anyone here, by the way, who is not a third-year student? Okay. Also, in terms of other bar exams, while we're going to talk mostly about the New York bar exam as a backdrop, anyone taking other states, California, Florida, Texas, just shout out a few states. Okay. Come on, nobody from here has ever taken Montana. Okay. What we're going to do then is we'll use New York more or less as our foundation, since the components on the New York bar exam are very similar to all of the other states that we've more or less just shouted out, but we can make some specific references to those other states as we go along. Anyway, the bar exam is dramatically different than what we're doing here at Hofstra Law School. If you think back on how most of us studied in our first year of law school, pretty much before finals, maybe 2 or 3 weeks before, we would take our Gilbert's legal lines, outlines from friends that had had a professor before, any old exams we can get our hands on, and more or less squirrel ourselves away somewhere in the library, and more or less cram together everything to address our 3-hour torts final exam. We cram everything in that our professor had given us throughout the entire semester. And then quite literally, as we walked out of our 3-hour, one topic exam, it's almost like someone lifted the plunger in the bathtub and much of what we've crammed in more or less just flushes away. Now we can do that in law school, cram and flush learning. For the bar exam, it is rather different because on most bar exams around the country, bar essay questions do not test one topic. They test 3 or 4 topics. They do not test general principles of law like we're learning here at Hofstra. For the most part, many jurisdictions place a high premium on our knowledge of local law, as does the New York Bar Exam. Also, in terms of keeping this thing more or less as a game that we have to learn how to play, it's kind of idiotic, if you will, that with this game, you could be in the bottom of your class and pass the bar exam on the first time through, but you could be in the top of your class and not pass any state's bar exam the first time through. Much of this comes from learning how to play the game. It can also be said, and we're not being cavalier about this at all, but we could take a good high school or college graduate and in 7 or 8 weeks adequately prepare them to pass any bar exam in the country.
Which, of course, begs the question, why am I going $120,000 in debt throughout 3 years of legal education? The answer is to learn the critical thinking, things you will not get in that 7 or 8 weeks of the bar review or of any other bar review course that's out there. Also, to keep in mind that this is more or less a game. And here, I'm mostly here to give us a perspective. Okay? We're going to be competing when we graduate law school with roughly at least 40,000 or so people. From our perspective, the Barbary perspective, basically, we're training about 35,000 of those 40,000. So from a perspective standpoint, the perspective is important. I don't lecture in the bar review course, but I want to underscore the perspective of what you're going to see regardless of where you're taking it. To get back to this game mindset, you can have on a bar exam like New York where you're getting 5 essays with essays having 2, 3, or 4 topics, lots of local law, things that even if you had in law school, you didn't have them quite tested this way. You're seeing them in an entirely different fashion. You're basically learning how to play a game during the bar course because on the bar exam, like New York or any place else, you don't always have to have the right answer to be able to pass the bar exam. If you look at the New York Law Journal each year, they always release the previous year's bar exam, and they'll release 2 good, solid passing scores of an applicant's response, applicant A and applicant B, to the same question. You read applicant A's response, and you say, you know, good, solid, flowing legal analysis. Looks a little bit wrong on the law, but a good, flowing legal analysis. Then you look at applicant B's response, and you say, again, good, solid, flowing legal analysis, but not only does it look like there's wrong points of law, not only did applicant B reach a wrong conclusion, but it looks like A and B answered entirely different questions. You can do that on the bar exam. You can approach it differently. So it doesn't always come down to knowing the right rule of law. It doesn't come down on any bar exam to reaching the right conclusion. They're looking for a good, flowing legal analysis. Yes, the more correct we are on the rules of law, the better our scores will be, but it doesn't come down to simply memorizing rules of law. Also, making the bar exam rather intimidating is where do we take the bar exam? We don't take it generally in a room like this with maybe 90 other students. We take the bar exam if you're sitting for New York, by way of example. Many of you might be sitting at the Jacobs Javits Convention Center in New York City, along with 5,000 applicants. All of you sitting there breathing in unison doing the same exam. If you're taking it elsewhere, maybe in Albany, New York, you might be in a hotel ballroom, similarly with 1,500 to 2,000 people. Most other jurisdictions operate the same way. In Massachusetts, we're sitting at the World Trade Center. Everybody, basically, in Massachusetts, except for a small group sitting in Western Mass in Springfield, sits in that same convention center. In Connecticut, everybody sits for the bar exam in Hartford. So to make this rather intimidating is, where are you sitting for the bar? You're sitting with thousands of people. It is so intimidating. True story, not urban legend. Several years ago, a woman got up during the morning session on Wednesday at the Javits Convention Center, clutched her bar exam to her chest and began running up and down the aisle screaming, I'm a covenant, and I'm running with the Lamb. Okay? True story, okay? Door slammed shut, no one's seen the woman since, okay? Extremely intimidating, okay? So our purpose here, hopefully, is to take this first step to minimize the anxiety and then hopefully move you in the right direction towards making this a truly once-in-a-lifetime experience. Now, what does the bar exam look like? In most jurisdictions, the bar is a 2-day ordeal. Okay? It's always given the last Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday in July, and the last Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday in February. The part that drives fear into many people is that Wednesday multi-state bar exam portion, what you're taking is 200 multiple-choice questions on 6 topics. Most of what we've had in our first year of law school. Torts, contracts, property, criminal law with criminal procedure, constitutional law, and evidence. 6 topics, 200 multiple-choice questions. It would surprise us to know that if you're getting roughly 130 right of those 200 questions, we're pretty much right on line for passing any bar exam in the country. Which is rather surprising. 130 right, that's 65%. So I'm telling you that if you're getting only 65% correct, you're right on line for passing the bar. And most of you sitting in this room will say, I've never settled for 65% correct in my entire academic career, which is why I've gotten as far as I have. It shows you there's something else at stake. Not only the intimidating factor of where you're sitting for the bar, but the types of questions and the games the bar examiner show. Again, a game. You can have a multiple choice question using something non-legal like, Hofstra Law School is in A, Newark, New Jersey, B, Miami, Florida, C, San Antonio, Texas, D, Los Angeles, California. For purposes of the bar exam, Hofstra Law School is now in A, Newark, New Jersey, because it's the least incorrect of all four choices. So you're not going to always have to come up with what's the right answer. You may be asked, what's the least incorrect? Which is the worst response to the question? So those are the type of games that we're going to need to know and to drive ourselves through this thing with as well. Okay? Also, adding to this, that multi-state portion of the bar in New York, it's worth 40% of our bar exam. Every jurisdiction looks at it. Most say, however well you do, it's worth a certain percentage of our score. Doing better on one portion would offset a weaker score on another portion, and so on. Let's look at the New York local day. On Tuesday, you have days of the bar exam like New York, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Florida, a whole host of other jurisdictions. And there's a Barbie Digest, which I don't think is included in the packet, but is down on the table if you have particular questions. It is in the digest in the back on the left. It's in the packet here regarding any state in the country. So let's look at New York. New York, you're getting 5 essays. Okay? Essays not like what we've had in law school. When I went to Hofstra Law School, I took maybe 7 or 8 different labor law courses. I never had criminal procedure. I never cracked the book in wills. I had Professor Gans, didn't have to use the book. However, right on target. Okay, so I never had criminal procedure. I never really had corporations. I never had any of the commercial paper courses. I took the basic core courses Hofstra requires us to take, which meant with all my labor law courses, I didn't have many of the topics tested on the bar exam. Now, many years removed and being a director of Barbary, my answer really is, I don't care. And you shouldn't really care either. Hofstra does do a good job of requiring certain core classes that will make you into a well-rounded lawyer. You take them in your first year. After your first year, constitutional law is still required. But evidence is not required, correct? But it's a class. Is it required here? No, but it's a class most all of us will take because it makes us into a well-rounded lawyer. Corporations, not required, but most of us will take it. Wills and trusts, for example, not required, but most of us will take it. Those are things that make us into a well-rounded lawyer. Okay, so when I went here, if I never had 8 or so, I only had these 8 labor law courses and the basic course. I never had commercial paper, never had sales, never had secure transactions, never had half the things taken on any of the bar exams I've taken and passed. The answer is you're going to get it out of your bar review course. For example, what we do is we're not going to teach you everything in the world of wills so you can go home and draft wills for your friends and family. We will come in and say, here is every conceivable wills issue you will see on your state's bar exam. In a subject like property, for example, the person who teaches for us, Paula Franzese, comes from Seton Hall Law School. You may have seen her if you did first-year property reviews and things like that. Professor Franzese comes in and sings the rules of the, you know, rule against perpetuities. I've never gone into an exam where I've come out singing the rule against perpetuities. Okay? So quite honestly, there are entertaining ways to get this across, and whether you've had a particular class in law school is not critical to bar exam success. May make it easier, but is not critical. So if you open up your packet and you look on the left-hand side, there's a green sheet here which goes through New York bar exam subject frequency. The top part's nice because it shows the past few administrations of the bar exam and the topics that were in each of the different essays that were presented. However, I'm more concerned with the chart at the bottom. On the bottom, you'll see there's the top 10 topics on the bar. Those are the ones that the majority of questions come from. And then you have the bottom half, the 11 through 21. Let's call them second and third tier topics. So if you were choosing your classes here and you're not graduating and you were looking to see what to take in your last semester, my first advice is choose based on areas of interest, Choose based on who the professor is, because you got some top-flight faculty, the likes of which you're never going to get to take a chance from again, a classroom again. And choose based on areas that are going to help you with your future career. All else having been said, look to see if there's anything at 9 o'clock on a Friday morning. You're not taking that class regardless. But then you look to see other areas, yes, and if there's something on the bar exam, that could be one of the last factors you could include. But if you look, you'll see from topics 1 through 10, those are the core topics for most, for New York's bar exam, and for most other jurisdictions' bar exams as well. And if you look at the number 2 topic, New York practice, when I went here, Hofstra did not teach New York practice. We said we are a national school. We're not going to teach anything local in scope. Since then, I believe it's changed a little bit in that they are having a New York practice class, but if memory serves, it's more of a problems in New York practice, not necessarily geared towards how you'll see New York practice on the actual bar exam. So even if you go through here and you've never taken a New York practice course and you're concerned because you're looking at the chart and seeing it's the second most frequently tested topic, you will never come out of your bar exam and say, you know, that was a really hard New York practice essay. You will come out and say, that was a rather challenging torts, contracts, and property essay, and oh, by the way, did you see the New York practice issue that was included in there as well? Okay? So the bar exam comes down to, it's not going to be one topic that gets you through or doesn't. It's not going to be one subject. And again, without being cavalier, I said if you get 130 right, you're right on line for passing the MBE. For most every jurisdiction in the country, you're going to find questions on there. Usually it's the first question when you come back from lunch, talking about some shooting, springing, reverting, executory interest with some guy named Cy Frey. You don't know who Cy is. You don't know what he's doing in the question. You're supposed to sit back and basically go, you know, that's one question. I could mess up 69 more questions, and I'm still going to be right on line for passing the bar. Also, last thing I want to mention before we get into some more meat over here about this game mindset of the bar exam. The bar examiners actually employ something called the alternatively correct theory. Think about it this way. You've got four-part multiple-choice question. Four choices. They want A, B, C, or D. Let's say they want answer A selected. Okay? Answer A. But 62% or more of the people in the country select answer B. What do the bar examiners do? They've got a dilemma. They can say, and they do say, answer A is correct, that's the one we wanted, but we're also going to accept answer B. A and B are now correct. Or, if more than 62% of the people select answer B, the bar examiners could say, you know, it is a poorly worded question, A is actually wrong, B is the one we're going to accept. Or the bar examiners can say, we're going to throw the question out totally. It's a poorly worded question, and we're going to factor that into everybody's bar score through a scaling process so it doesn't hurt anybody. Which causes me to wonder, wait a minute, let's see if I got this right. If we've got 40,000 people taking the bar, 35,000 taking bar B, that's more than 62%, why don't we just tell everybody in the country, select answer A for all 200 multiple choice questions? Obviously, it's not going to happen, but it does show you that if there's something you know, and you're the only one in the country that knows it, it's not going to help you. And conversely, if there's something that's so challenging for everybody that's shown on the bar exam that nobody knows it, it's not going to hurt you either. So that goes truly to this mindset of the bar exam as a game. Okay? Now, let's look at the New York essays. You're getting 5 essays. They, too, are worth 40% of your New York bar score. 5 essays could cover 28 topics, lots of local law, 2, 3, 4 topics per essay, and the chart does a nice job of showing where they come from. But again, it doesn't always come down to knowing the right rule of law. It's giving this good, flowing legal analysis, and you can get points without knowledge of law, however, by structuring the question the right way, the answer the right way. However, obviously, the more law you're going to give them that's correct, the more on point and the more points you are going to have. The other 2-point portions of the bar, in New York, there's something called the MPT, Multi-State Performance Test, which causes a lot of people to shake and shudder. Okay? Think first-year legal research and writing. It's 10% of the New York bar. About 30 other jurisdictions or so have adopted performance tests. California has a full day of performance testing. In New York, they give you a closed universe, Multi-State Performance Test, There's no specific law that you need to know. They give you the law. They give you the cases. They give you the statutes and citations. They give you client interview notes. And they ask you to do something like draft a memo to the senior partner at the firm telling the firm how to proceed in this matter. Or they'll flip it around and say, here is the motions that were presented to the judge. Here's how she ruled on it. Tell the judge in a memo why she was wrong on how she decided on each of these five motions. Or they might say, and they might also say, give you several tasks, here are the facts, here's the interview notes, draft a letter to our client advising them of their rights and liabilities. And by the way, you've got 90 minutes for this entire exercise. Extremely heavy on time management, which is why an entire multi-state performance test workshop would be included in a bar review course. And the final part is New York multiple choice questions, which are 10%, you're getting 50 of them. These are questions you really can't even study for. You're either going to know them or not. It's extremely picky. So you basically know it by going through your bar material, or you don't. But again, out of the 50 questions, getting roughly 28 or 29 right keeps you right on line for passing the bar. So this is probably the only exam you will ever have in your life where you will say, you know, I've gotten C's all the way through law school. Well, if you get C's through the bar exam, you're going to also be just fine. Okay? Now, other things. Start planning your life, looking ahead for your summer when you are going to take the bar. There are certain things you can and should think about doing early, even with simple things like how do you plan your life, how do you run your life. If you're one of these people that likes to go to the gym every day, you don't stop everything while you're studying for the bar. You continue to work out. You continue to go to the gym. You continue to maintain your life. If you've got a personal relationship with somebody, you make sure you put time aside to continue the personal relationship. If you want to begin a personal relationship, you make sure you have time budgeted into your day to begin the personal relationship. The only two things you don't do is you don't say, you know, this is the summer, I'm going to get fit, I'm going to study like I've never studied before, I'm going to quit smoking, isolate myself in the library. No. If you smoke, you continue to smoke through August and through the bar exam. When I mentioned this, somebody came back, well, what happens if you want to end a relationship? I guess the good thing is you can go to somebody and say, you know, I'm going to be rather busy for the next 8 or 9 weeks. It's a good first step towards ending that relationship as well. So, a lot of topics, but you maintain your sanity. You'll hear this analogy time and time again. It is truly a marathon. You can't learn it all in the first 2 weeks. You can't put it off and learn it in the last 2 weeks. You do need this steady investment of time. Okay? Now, having said that, there are some things that we should not do during our summer bar studies. You should know, by the way, do be aware of the filing deadlines for the bar. Most filing deadlines are sometime in the spring. New York, by way of example, is April 1st to April 30th. New Jersey starts February 1st. I mention that in particular because many students from Hofstra do take New York and New Jersey, Connecticut, and Massachusetts, and we'll talk about that in a moment as well. So New Jersey early filing is like April 1st, which is important because it starts out at $425 to file, and it has a rolling fee that increases to like $600 or $700. New York, April 1st to April 30th, $250, relatively modest. Other jurisdictions most Hofstra students take as well as New York. Connecticut, later in March, April, or May is your filing. Massachusetts is like 75 days before the actual bar exam. And in the packet that you have, on the left-hand side as well, there's a blue flyer which goes through the filing deadlines for every jurisdiction that most students would be considering to take. Okay? But you need to pay attention to the filing deadlines. New York, for example, is strict, as are most states. If you file early, it'll get bounced back to you. If you file late, they will say, sorry, you'll now sit for the bar 6 months later in February. So go through there, mark the dates on your calendar so that you don't take a chance on missing anything. Okay? Now, some things that you do not do during the summer. Keep in mind, there's a lot of law and a lot of stuff to go through at the bar. This is not a memorization exam. With my meetings with the bar examiners through a committee I'm on with the New York State Bar, they reinforce time and time again, they do not want to see rule, rule, rule. If you're merely listing for them rules of law, that is the quickest way to make sure you do not pass the bar exam. Also, don't go back and start reading your Horn books from first year or second year. Calamari and Perillo, you know, Prosser on Torts or whatever. Those are good. If you read Prosser on Torts, quite honestly, you will have covered everything imaginable in the world of torts. However, the bar exam for any jurisdiction is only going to cover a certain narrow subset from those areas. So you rely on the bar course to come in and show you what those narrow areas are. I mean, I wouldn't even attempt to take a bar exam simply by reading through all the Horn books because the scope is just so wide. Same, too, if you're looking back at your first year or second year class notes, keep in mind purpose of law school, purpose of the bar exam, dramatically different. So your first year class notes on, let's say, torts and contracts and property may not be in sync with what is expected from the bar examiners. I also mentioned not relying on past exams where the examiners release answers because they could be wrong on the rules of law, but they're good examples for two things. One, it shows you what a good flowing legal analysis would be, and it also is a barometer for you to look at an essay that was released and hopefully have yourself sit back and say, you know, I can certainly do a better writing product than that, and if that's what I'm competing against, I'm moving in the right direction. Other things people have asked at Barbie table or elsewhere about sitting on bar review classes, should you consider going to a class that's live, or can you rely on doing it on DVD at a remote location? Big question I had when I was in law school. I lived out here. I thought about, you know, I was living out in Point Lookout, and I thought about maybe I should go into Manhattan and take my bar class live every day. It was pointed out to me that if you're at the class live in Manhattan, you're not getting any real benefit. Yes, you're seeing a live professor. Yes, you can ask the professor questions before or after class or during a break, but you're not going to sit there like in law school where you raise your hand and interrupt the professor. Similarly, if you're taking the class here at Hofstra, where by way of example we run like mornings and, you know, we have a St. John's morning and afternoon and evening, and there's a lot of flexibility in the scheduling, what you should think about is where is it most convenient for you to study for your bar? Where is your living arrangement the best? Where maybe do you have family support? Maybe where do you eat for free? Where is your rent paid up until? Those are the factors that really should concern us. If you're sitting here going, you know, I live here right in the area and I can take the class at Hofstra, my attitude is take it here. Why travel the hour plus into the city each day, waste travel time, and come back here? The way we've structured it, for example, in our class, and different bar courses either do something like this or they don't, if you have a question, you're not going to have your question while you're in class anyway. Your question is going to come up 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night when you're studying. So we've built in Q&A days where you just pick up the phone, call the office, dictate your question in, and somebody calls you back and goes over the answer until you understand it. So don't choose your class based on where it's live. Choose based on where it's easiest for you. Also, when I was in law school, I remember people thinking, I'm going to study with flashcards. I've always wanted to use flashcards. I've always wanted to create my own flashcards. I always thought that would be great. You find out you don't always have the time to do that. So you don't change your style of study dramatically from what got you this far. I also thought, what about creating these mnemonics, like silly phrases like, you know, S-L-A-P, where L stands for larceny. That way, if I'm reading a question, I can say, L applies here, L for larceny. Mnemonic is just like a silly skeleton that helps you recall certain principles. Unfortunately, you will find there's no mnemonic in the world that will help you with larceny is the taking and carrying away of property known to be another with the intent to permanently deprive, etc., etc., etc. So mnemonics might be nice as a start, but again, that memorizing rules of law, those are things that you really can't rely on to get yourself through the bar exam. Other things, people are talking about, what if I don't like to read for the bar? I hate reading, okay? I would start opening up my book. I remember I had administrative law here at Hofstra. The moment I opened the book, worst course I ever had, no offense, I'm not going to mention the professor's name who taught it. Boring as heck. I can't stand reading this stuff. So even in Barbary, where we have these big volumes that literally contain 100% of all the law that you ever see on the bar, you're not going to sit down and start reading this stuff. They're there to go back to if you need something in greater detail or in greater reference. The professors in the bar course basically come out and say, here is the rule of law, here's how you'll see it, here's how you remember it, and here is how you apply it. If you're curious to hear what the bar lecture sounds like, speak with the bar course, get a copy of a CD, and you'll be able to go through and say, now I see why my friends choose this course, etc., etc., etc. So it's something good that you can preview. And let's see. Last item is people have asked about studying by software. Nice to have software, nice to review it, nice way to do practice questions. I mean, we even include software as a part of the bar course that you can work on online, do questions, chart your results, compare them to, you know, the thousands of other people across the country. All nice stuff. However, unfortunately, the bar exam is still done the old-fashioned way. You read a question, take your number two pencil, fill in a circle, turn the page, and then read the next question. It's an old-fashioned exam. Yes, you can take the exam on laptop, not everywhere, not in Connecticut, not in a lot of other jurisdictions, but in New York, for example, they used to say, you know, if you wanted to take the bar on laptop, we have a laptop lottery, which you're all going to enter if you're going to take the bar this summer. They will tell you the laptop lottery is usually limited to 2,000 people, like they said last year. However, last year was the first time the bar examiner said, we are able to now accommodate everybody who wants to take the exam on laptop. New Jersey is a little bit more limited, 1,500 or 2,000, but many states are moving in that direction. What's the biggest fear? For most people, it's not taking the exam on laptop. For many of us, the last exam you guys might have taken when you wrote an exam was maybe back in your freshman or sophomore year in college. So don't make this the first exam you're ever taking on laptop. But for most of us, because writing and typing is dramatically a different skill, for most of us, that's no longer a concern. The bigger fear is technology. What happens if the bar examiners lose my essay exam? I've been assisting with running Barbary now for like 22 years since they started with laptops and everything. I have never, ever seen anybody have a problem with the bar because the bar examiners lost their essays. Except for 2 years ago, when the bar examiners did lose in New York about 60 or so essays from different applicants. However, they remedied it by psychometric formulas and basically found different ways to assess who would have passed and who didn't. And I think it came down to only two applicants who had a bone of contention, but it was pretty much shown that even if they had the highest score on those two essays that were lost, they still would not have been able to pass the bar exam. So don't let the fear of technology keep you from taking it on laptop. In fact, for some of the people I know, it was probably the best thing that ever happened to them that their essays were lost because the bar examiners were extremely fair in helping with that. Okay? Now, what's our day going to look like when you are studying for the bar? How much fun are we looking to have? Okay? Essentially, you're going to go through a bar class. I'm just using Barbary as a barometer. Different classes do it differently. We go for about 3.5 to 4 hours a day, 5 days a week. There's no Saturdays, no Sundays. In fact, check with any bar course to see their schedule. You don't want classes on Saturdays. You don't want classes on Sundays because you do need a couple of days to regroup and pull it all together and actually to rest and adjust to your own personal life as well. So 3.5 to 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, no Saturdays, no Sundays. And then for the most part, you would study for about 4 to 5 more hours a day outside of class, making this essentially a full 8-hour-a-day workday. Over the weekend, you would put in about 10 hours total time, 5 and 5, 8 and 2, 10 and 0, however you broke it down. And bar courses, we generally begin around May 22nd, May 23rd or so. You keep up with that type of regimen, that type of schedule, and we give you a study schedule, for example. Most courses would have something, different degrees of analness, if you will. We get extremely anal where we show you what you're doing quite literally every hour of every day, which essays to submit for grading, which multiple choice questions to do, what material to review, that sort of thing. But you're keeping up with that schedule from the time the bar course begins around May 22nd straight through the July 4th holiday weekend, after which time classes still continue until around July 15th or so. But after that time, you're putting in more or less like an 8 to 10 hour a day work day every day of the week, 7 days of the week, right on up until the bar exam. The good thing is around July 15th or so, the bar courses are over, so you don't have that 3.5 to 4 hours a day interrupting your studying. You can now study straight through for the 8 or 9 hours a day. couple things you would put on your calendar. I mean, we mentioned how intimidating it is to sit in the Jacob Javits Convention Center. You do want to have ample opportunities to do practice exams, so that's something you would want to check in with the bar courses as well. One of the things we do, for example, I mentioned how anal we are, we actually rent out the Javits Convention Center so that you can sit there. I mean, they actually have a door, like a garage door, that slides down exactly at the time the bar is about to start. It's like a prison door rolling down on this huge grate. And it's remarkable how seconds before the bar exam, people are still getting there late. This is your bar exam. Budget your time. Get there early. And it's like an Indiana Jones movie where people are diving on the floor to go underneath this door, not realizing that there are two really large doors wide open on both sides of the metal door coming down. Anyway, so we rent out the Jacob Javits Convention Center so you get a feeling for this intimidation. You get to know how long the bathroom lines are, where the bathrooms are, even silly things like that, so you're more acclimated to it. And then you do this practice exam that gets graded against like 35,000 people across the country. And 2 days later, 3 days later, 4 days later, you go online and you get an individual breakdown of where you're strong, where you're weak, against basically everybody. Okay? So you do want to make sure that you do have comparison and not just from friends of yours sitting with you. So you're looking for a comparison on a bigger scale. Okay? Questions on anything so far? Anybody want to throw anything out? Just again, feel free to interrupt me as we go. A few other things to wrap up and move along quickly. That's basically what your summer is going to look like. From July 15th or so up until the actual day of the bar exam, you get another study schedule showing you in detailed fashion what you're doing every day up until the bar exam. Now, a lot of people have questions about taking two bars at once. Nobody ever told me about it when I was in law school. So I sat for the New York bar on Tuesday and Wednesday, and that was it. 6 months later, my law firm comes to me and goes, you know, Bob, it'd actually be nice if you took New Jersey as well. We're kind of near the border. So I studied all over again, went and sat for the New Jersey bar, hit myself in the head realizing it's the same topics I studied 6 months ago. So it's not that you have to do it, but I encourage you all, think about it early. Picture the New York bar like this really big umbrella. The umbrella covers, let's say, 30 topics. New Jersey, Connecticut, and Massachusetts fit neatly under that umbrella. New Jersey shouldn't even be called the New Jersey bar exam. Seven topics, mostly all those multi-state topics you're having on Wednesday with New Jersey civil procedure. Hardly any local law whatsoever fits neatly under that New York umbrella. Massachusetts, about 22 topics. Yes, a little bit of local law, not a lot. And Connecticut, about 18 topics. Yes, a little bit of local law as well. But essentially, by studying for New York, you're studying for the big umbrella. Most everything you need is covered for those other jurisdictions under the New York umbrella. And yes, you can add on for a nominal fee, like $50 or $100, some extra material for those three states, which go through the extra little local law in an outline fashion. You also get practice essays with bulletproof model answers. And you also have a lecture that comes on CD for about a half hour, 40 minutes, that goes through, here's what you learned for New York, now here's how you apply it all on New Jersey, Connecticut, and Massachusetts. So whether you've thought about it or not, this is something you never want to do again. You're never going to know more law than when you graduate Hofstra and go through your bar course for the first and hopefully only time. It's something to think about. It also makes you more marketable given the economy today. We don't know where our future is going to go. And once you take the bar, you can essentially, you know, open up many more doors for yourself because you'll have two admissions under your belt. Someone else might have only one admission under their belt. Last thing I want to mention about the taking two bars is there is a loophole. People always ask about it. We can go over it at the barbie table later. The loophole is Washington, D.C. Many states say if you want to be admitted in our state, California, New Jersey, Florida, Texas, you've got to take and pass our bar exam. Other jurisdictions are a little more liberal, like New York, Pennsylvania. They say, you know, if you're admitted in a reciprocal jurisdiction and practicing for 5 of the past 7 years, we'll let you waive into our bar without sitting for the exam. So in theory, if you're a Pennsylvania attorney practicing in Pennsylvania for 5 years out of the past 7, it's reciprocal with New York, you can waive into New York that way. And you can waive in from New York into Pennsylvania. Other jurisdictions, New Jersey, Florida, you can't waive in, you must take the bar exam. So there's a loophole. You can always take, if you're going into military or something like that, you can always take the New Jersey bar when you graduate law school, if you have no desire to practice in New York. Take the New Jersey bar, waive immediately into Washington, D.C., which I'll mention in a second. And then New York will say, you're admitted in New Jersey, non-reciprocal. You're also admitted in D.C., which is reciprocal. For 5 of the past 7 years, you're practicing for 5 of the past 7 years, you combine those two and you can waive into New York. The rule for Washington, D.C. is on this National Day, Multi-State Day, D.C. will look at your score and say, how'd you do? The national average is about a 141 scaled score, which is about 130 right. Washington, D.C. will say, national average 141, hey, if you get a 133 scaled score, a below average, only fair score at best, you're exactly what we want to admit to the D.C. bar, and you can waive into Washington, D.C. on motion. So something to keep in mind. Last thing to keep in mind, and we'll wrap up in about 5 minutes, NPRA, for those of you, put your hands, who's already taken the NPRA and gotten it done? Good. Who's taking it this coming week? Okay, for those of you who are taking it this week, your friends will tell you it's the easiest exam. I went to the bar class, let's say. I put in some time the morning exam. I got through no problem. When you come out of there, you will know you failed the exam, and you will know you will have to do it again. That's a good sign. I'm more concerned with those people that come out and say, you know, I actually rather enjoy this academic exercise. They didn't know enough to realize how tricky it is. So what happens is everybody goes through, for example, we just have a one-day, four-hour class. You study in a one-day bar class for that. You put in maybe 15 to 20 hours reviewing the material, which is what the bar course would say. Many people put in far less and seriously look at it only on that day. They then take the NPRA, they pass, and then they come back and tell their friends, oh, it's a piece of cake, no problem, even though they thought they had failed on that day. So keep that in mind when you come out of there this weekend. Many jurisdictions do require the NPRA. Some, like Massachusetts, say you have to take and pass the NPRA before we're even going to let you sit for the bar exam. Connecticut, New Jersey say if you get a C or better in your law school ethics class, that's fine enough. You don't need to take the class. Last thing, in 2 minutes before we do go, start thinking about things you can do early. Whatever bar course you're signing up with, check with the bar course first. For example, we have, with our course, you can start in the spring semester. You can start downloading multi-state lectures and doing practice multiple choice questions. You can then, in that period of time between when classes are over and exams are over, before the bar classes begin, you can actually go and do lectures and more questions and analysis. In the bar course, there are, again, more multiple choice workshops, including the thing like our renting out the Javits Convention Center. Your goal is to see where you can get the most material so that you don't need to add on extra supplements. And in hindsight, that's the way we pretty much tried to design our own bar review program. Anyway, let's wrap up. Any questions we have, I'll take personally. And hopefully this is at least a good primer to move us in the right direction.
We also have a little